Welcome to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau. And you know, the only fruit I've been successful growing lately are alpine strawberries, which the Japanese beetles like as much as me, and a single grapevine that seems to thrive on neglect because I've cut it down a number of times by mistake. But you know what? I still get a thrill out of picking the fruit off of those plants. And if you want that thrill, well, we have a couple experts with us today that can help you. Back with us today are Amaya Atucha. She's a professor and department chair and the Gottschalk Endowed Chair for Cranberry Research in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. And also from UW-Madison is Christelle Godeau. She is a professor in the Department of Entomology. That's right, folks, bugs. Are you having problems with your fruit plants? Are you looking for advice on maybe selecting a plant for your area? Give us a call with your questions, 800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email. The address is talk@wpr.org. Ladies, it's so nice to have you back with us today.
Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
Thanks for having us.
Of course.
Hi, thank you for having us.
Of course. It's nice to have. We got two of the three that we usually have on. Leslie's going to be with us in a couple of weeks, but we couldn't get all of you at the same time because you're so busy. So
that's too bad.
Yes, it is. But, you know, we'll cover the disease part at a different time. So but you guys will probably be able to mention, Amaya, you specifically could probably touch on the disease part a little bit. So if anybody...
I'll try to help, but, you know,
we'll see.
Dr. Holland is really the expert.
Exactly. You can't know everything. So since the last time you were here, I think maybe we've had a little bit of change up in how your departments work with maybe the extension. Were you at one point part of it and now you're not? Is that how that kind of worked out, Amaya?
So some of the faculty at UW-Madison have an appointment with a college. In my case, as an example, I'm a professor in the College of Agricultural Life Sciences, mm-hmm. but I also have a dual appointment with the Division of Extension. So okay. We think about the Division of Extension, you know, it's a division, but we think about it almost like another college. So we're in both of them. Okay. And so that's the case for when you hear about like the extension specialist on campus, like faculty like myself that have sort of like, you could consider a double appointment, even though we are, you know, professors in CALS. And that's the case for me. And that's the case for Leslie Holland, our plant pathologist. And then Christelle, she is full time with the College of Agricultural Life Sciences here in Cal, at UW.
Okay, yeah, because we have experts that have both on their names and some that don't, so it gets a little confusing for everybody, but you're just experts, I guess that's kind of what we'll take a look at it, so thank you. Thank you for explaining that up a little bit, and Christelle, I would imagine that you get a lot of people from Extension asking for your advice, though.
Yeah, so it's interesting because I used to be in Extension, and I just changed my appointment a couple years ago. So now I'm not Extension anymore, but I still do a lot of work with growers and with Extension personnel that might have questions for me. So you're never far away from Extension, even if you're not officially Extension,
right.
Because talking to the people in the state and, you know, it's part of the Wisconsin idea. So we're all very involved with helping whoever it is that needs help.
Exactly.
And when we have an expertise, it makes it easy. So.
Exactly. Well, I would imagine that you're both kind of dealing a lot with dry weather. How large of an effect has this dry weather had in this time for the fruits? Amaya, would you take that?
Yeah. We've been really, really dry. And you know, being dry has some positive aspects. So, you know, in the case of like diseases, when it's dry and we don't get a lot of precipitation, it's great because we tend to see less of those diseases. But then when we get to the point where it's just too dry and we don't have the ability to irrigate, then of course the plants suffer. There's stress. The plants are not able to really control the temperature. Like, you know, we think about it, like the leaves of the plants get really hot, and so they shut down, they stop you know, producing photosynthesis. And so there's no fuel to grow those fruits. So what the plant tends to do, you know, something very classic effect that we see is on apple trees, we see what we call the June drop. Like we see like a lot of fruit dropping because the plant just doesn't have the ability to grow those fruits until, you know, for harvest. And so we tend to see, depending on when this stress happens, you could have less fruit, maybe you can have smaller fruit just because there's just not enough. If you have the chance of irrigated, then it's great because you have the benefit of the dry weather and having less diseases, but you're still providing the plants with enough water to be able to have a proper crop.
How is that going to this almost, I don't know if we're in a drought, but we're very close, I would imagine. How does that affect the plants then the following year? Does it have an effect?
Yeah, because, you know, especially fruit trees, all of the fruit trees are perennial. So anything that happens with this growing season could potentially have an effect on the following growing season. So thinking about like plants preparing for winter, you know, if you have a plant that is stressed, it's really struggling, they probably won't have enough reserves to be able to prepare for the winter. And there might be chances that you might have a little bit more, you know, cold damage. Or like if you have a young, new, let's say, tree, like a pear tree, a peach tree, and that tree really struggled and was not able to, let's say, like develop a really nice root system, it might just be, again, that tree will be even more vulnerable for like swings of temperatures in the winter and potentially winter damage. It affects everything. If you don't have enough reserves for winter, it also means that you might also not have enough reserves to be able to, you know, battle diseases or insects, because just the plant has only so much fuel that has to partition into the different things that they have to do. So that's some of the things that I would expect. It's very interesting because when plants get stressed, especially fruit trees get stressed during the summertime, it's the same time that the flowers for the following year are being formed. And so one of the reactions that the plant has is that it tends to produce a lot of flowers the following year, sort of a way of like, I'll preserve myself by, you know, trying to reproduce. But that doesn't mean that the quality of those flowers are great. So you might have a lot of blossoms next year because of stress, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a good thing. So that's something else that we could expect.
Okay. So for those who have fruit trees in their yard, how often should we be watering them?
Well, there's not a recipe for everybody because it depends on the kind of soil that you have. It will depend also on the, you know, age of your tree, especially like you were just saying, you have the one vine. Vines are notorious for having a really, really strong and deep root system. They will go and find that water. Versus there's others, like if you have an apple tree and you just happen to have maybe a dwarf rootstock that tends to control the size of the tree, well, everything that you see on the top of the tree is also happening on the root system. So if you have a small canopy above ground, you're going to have a small root system. So that means that they're not going to be able to explore for water. So younger trees need to be watered more often because they have smaller root systems. So, you know, maybe if you have the ability to water them at least once a week, that would be great. If you have a more established tree, an older tree, that tree is going to be doing fine. Maybe you don't have to water it every week, you know, maybe every other week just to make sure that they're fine. That's okay. But I would be mostly concerned with younger trees, and if you have like small bushes, like if you're growing like gooseberries, currants, if you have blueberries, they also tend to have a smaller root system, so you would want to water them more often.
Okay. Now what about the insects, Christelle? Does this dry weather affect them?
Yeah, and of course, you know, any biological system is going to be affected by the weather, the temperature, or the moisture that we get. So with insects, it's interesting because obviously they've been here for a long time and they will be here for another very long time, right?
Yeah.
So there's so many of them, over a million species of insect. There are going to be some that are very adapted to drier weather and some that are very adapted to wetter weather. So if we have a dry year, we might see fewer, for example, apple maggots, because they tend to like the moisture in the soil before they emerge. So you might have fewer some of those insects. So apple maggot is one that is in apple trees, for example. But then you might have a flare-up of mites or thrips or other insects that do like more dry weather. So we always have some insects that will flourish in drier weather and some insects that will flourish in wetter weather. Even though they're all here and they're kind of adapted to our conditions, they will flare up more or less depending on those conditions. So in dry weather, you can expect to see more mites. And people know mites, they've seen them around. So they're more likely to see more of them if we continue to have this dry weather. Because if you think about it too, when it rains, it washes off those small insects. So if you have a lot of heavy rains, you might have fewer of them on your plants from that and from other factors, obviously. But if it's dry, you're going to have a flare-up of those kind of insects. So there's always going to be some. It just depends on the conditions of which ones are going to be more present and more problematic for people.
What have you been seeing a lot of in the last couple months or so?
Well, so we're seeing Japanese beetle, obviously. That's a big one that people are seeing. So talking about dry and wet weather, one that we see every year now for over a decade is a spotted wing Drosophila. That's one that likes moist weather. So if you have more moist, they like high humidity, you're going to have a lower population and they will have a slower head start than they would if it was very moist. So at this point, we're seeing Japanese beetle, we're seeing in apple, we're seeing codling moth. That's one that's always present and is obviously here. Plum curculio is another one that we see in apple. I don't know if we're seeing more plum curculio this year. I haven't seen, and my colleagues, interestingly, with this weather that we had in the spring, that are more in the Midwestern state, the Eastern state, I mean, have no fruit. They have no apple fruit at all. They got so much frost that they have no apple fruit. So we're lucky that we have some fruit, but some regions are going to really suffer in the East from the frost that they had in the spring. So yeah, we're seeing, you know, kind of the usual suspects that people should expect to see.
Mm-hmm. And we are talking about fruit today with our guest, Christelle Godeau, professor in the Department of Entomology, and Amaya Tucha, professor and department chair in the Department of Plant and Agroecosystem Sciences. If you've got a question about growing fruit or you have a comment about how your fruit trees, bushes are doing, please give us a call, 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@WPR.org. Our lines are open so you can get in real quick. Love to hear from you. So Amaya, what are some of the trends that we're seeing right now in fruiting plants? We have our usual suspects, of course, you know, apples, and that's a big one, obviously. Cherries, I'm assuming. But are there some other things that people are branching out in the state, especially maybe with our climate warming up a little bit?
I always get the question about peaches, and this is so funny because, you know, it's a big gamble, and so a lot of the work that we do is mostly with commercial growers. So when I have a commercial grower that is thinking about establishing peaches, I'm always very cautious about it, because you could have a year that is great and have a really wonderful harvest and make, you know, a substantial amount of money, and you're going to have a year where you get a frost or you get a really like a polar vortex and you lose your trees. So I mean, we're talking about like really expensive investments in establishing this kind of orchards, and so I'm more of the be very cautious, and I wouldn't do it unless you are on a very specific place, microclimate, maybe really close to the lake. It has to be a very special place, because we definitely do have some commercial growers that have peaches. And so when I'm in the show, or I get like a neighbor or a friend, and then they ask me about having a tree in their backyard, I always continue with my theory, like just don't do it because it's very risky. But I'm like, well, but if you only want to have a couple of trees and you're just going to plant a tree, if it doesn't work out, you just cut it off, I guess it's fine. And I usually get people telling me, oh, I get pitches every year, every year. And so I would say, you know, if you're interested in pitches, give it a try. This is a year in which, you know, we did have some spring frost, and that definitely affects the quantity of peaches that you have, but it's been a dry year. So if you escape the spring frost, that would have been, it would have been a great year for peaches. So that's one that I get quite a bit of questions about. There's a couple of new berries that we've been working on, especially one that's called honeyberries. I don't know if you've ever heard about honeyberries. So,
yes.
Some of our colleagues at the Division of Extension have a trial at our one of our agricultural research stations in West Madison, and there's a variety trial. And so we're evaluating multiple varieties of honeyberries, and those are super cool, and there's like different, and they taste different. They also are very early in the season, so it's like even before blueberries. So, and they taste, to me, I always describe them as a mix between maybe a blueberry and a raspberry. They can be a little bit like tart and acidic. I don't know, they're really yummy. And the biggest issue we have with that is that because they're so early and they're sweet and they are, you know, very notorious because they're blue and they have that same bloom as the blueberries, the birds go crazy because they have nothing else to eat. And you have like these berries that are delicious very early on in June. So that's another one that I have had a lot of questions about, honeyberries. They're also really cold hardy. And the flowers are very resistant to frost.
Nice.
And so that's an interesting new fruit crop that maybe people have not heard about it, and they might want to think about stuffing some honeyberries.
Are honeyberries readily available to buy at garden centers?
Not really, but there are some places online. I have to say that, you know, like mm-hmm. everything that you buy online, you know, quality might not be great.
Sure.
There's some nurseries. There's a breeding program up in Canada, and they have some plants there. But I, for my personal use, many years ago when I heard about them, I bought a couple of plants online on an online nursery, and I established them in my backyard, and I still have them. And I've been having, you know, honeyberries, well, what is left, because between the chipmunks and, you know, that all of the creatures back in my backyard, they eat them all, but they're delicious. So yes. I expect that we're going to start seeing more nurseries and different garden centers offering, because it's becoming very popular.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. We've got a number of calls. Chris in Rice Lake, you go right ahead.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question. I've got a small little area of apple trees that I have, and I want to state, you know, right off the bat that my ground is very hard, so that's part of this, I'm sure. But they keep tipping over. I mean, once they start with the apples, they get very top heavy and they tip over. And I noticed that they've only got roots on one side of the tree and not the other. If I could get a little help with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. So what I would say is that many of these apple trees come on rootstocks that they try to, they help control the size of the tree. So it's always recommended that if you have some sort of support, whether you have like maybe like a really long like bamboo stick that you can help for the plant to be able to have some physical support so it doesn't move with the wind or with the weight of the apples if you have a lot of apples. The roots on only one side might just be that, you know, you just don't really have it properly established on the ground. So what you could do is probably like add a little bit more soil around the base of the tree. What I would say, the only thing that you want to be careful with that is that you want to make sure that you're not burying the graft union, because you want to keep the scion. So it's basically the part of the tree that is growing on the top that is the cultivar that you want. You want to not keep it under any kind of soil, because it's going to start rooting. And that is going to change how your tree is going to grow. And so that will be another thing. Just put a little bit more soil, try to ground it like back and anchor that tree and anchor it with maybe some help from like some sort of tutor. Again, you know, a bamboo stick like would work if you have a couple of those. And the fact that some of the fruit and the branches are bending because of the weight of the tree, that's just natural. It's going to happen anyway because of, yeah, as the fruits are growing, they're just dragging them down. And it's actually a good thing because it's helped control that those trees don't become like incredibly vigorous and have an outrageous canopy.
Chris, a question for you. Are the roots growing all, like for all the trees, have the roots on just one side, or is it just kind of here and there? Just curious.
I had two of them tip over last year, and I ended up digging them out. It's a little bit of a slope. So the roots, they grow down the slope, but they don't grow up the slope.
Ah, okay.
Well, that makes total sense because yep. roots actually have a gravitational way of figuring out like where like the soil is going down, and they never grow up. That's the reason they're actually able to sense that. It's really cool. I'm not going to explain like the very basic research that is happening there, but they're able to sense that. So the fact that you have them on a slope, which you didn't say that before, makes total sense that that's why the roots are probably just growing on the surface of the slope, down the slope. I also wonder if because they're growing on a slope, you have not a lot of topsoil, and then maybe underneath, like you don't have a lot of soil, and so you keep all those roots very superficial, and that might also be affecting the anchorage of that tree, and that's why they're tipping. So again, you need to put some sort of support for that tree. That would be my number one recommendation.
Okay, well, good luck with that, Chris. Appreciate the phone call. Mike in Poignet, you are next. Go right ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a couple of cherry trees that I planted 6 or 7 years ago. I bought them from a nursery online. They've both grown nicely. I've got a Mount Morrissey tart cherry and a black tartarian. And I was told that they would help each other cross-pollinate. And my question is about pruning these trees. I have been pruning them the first week in April, and the Mount Morrissey tree's got a nice round top on it. I'd like to flatten it out and get the branches out to the side a little bit more so I don't have to climb up a ladder. I'm 74 and my wife doesn't like me on a ladder anymore. So, but the black tartarian, I trim that tree and everything grows straight up. That nothing comes out. I don't know what I'm doing wrong.
Well, it's very tricky in general to prune, you know, fruit trees. So it's not that you're doing anything wrong. It's just that it's not easy. And there's a number of techniques that we've used over the years, and they have evolved, and we've changed the way that we grow things. So one of the things that I see that people make a lot of mistakes on, and I wonder if this is something that you might be doing with your black tartarian cherry, is that we tend to do a lot of cuts in that April pruning that you're doing, whether you're doing in April, in March, in February, it's fine. But it's what we call our dormant or winter pruning. And so you remove a lot of material because you want to take it out so that you can actually like clean up this canopy. And when we ended up doing that, we stimulate even more growth. So my recommendation is remove big branches that are maybe in the middle of the tree from the very base and do maybe one big removal of a branch that might have many of these shoots, and you remove it completely. That is going to really open the canopy. It's going to get a lot of like sun getting in with only one big cut. Then the following year, do another one of those big cuts. So remove bigger branches instead of cleaning up a lot of small little branches. And that is going to help you with that growth.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much for that question, Mike. We're going to take a short little break, and then we'll be right back with more of your questions. This is Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, and our guests today are Amaya Tucha, professor and department chair in the Department of Plant and Agro-Ecosystem Sciences, and Christelle Godeau, professor in the Department of Entomology, and we're talking about fruit. So if you've got a question, give us a call, 800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And let's get right back to the phones. Mike and Franklin, go right ahead.
Well, thank you for taking my call and appreciate your program. I always look forward to Garden Talk on Friday. I want to start out with a comment. There have been a lot of places that I've looked for purchasing things online, whether it's plants or whatever. And I have run across a source, the National Arbor Day Foundation, where I have been able to get hazelnut trees and a fig tree that have done really, really well here. So that's a place where people may be able to search for something, and then they go ahead and they plant the tree for you when you order as well. My question is the university doing anything to increase the amount of types of trees, especially fruit trees, available within, you know, this area or that are going to be really, really good for the climate that we experience here, really cold in the winter, really hot in the summer?
I can give it a try to answer that. So a part of our programs and some of the programs in Extension, we actually do work on trying to evaluate potential new fruit crops. In particular, thinking about like my work and the work that I do with the Division of Extension is more focused towards commercial production. And so we are thinking about what are potentially new fruit crops that we can bring to the state and that could be, commercially viable for our agricultural industry. So we have in the past tested things like, you know, grapes. That's how we started with the grapes. Now we do work on seedless table grapes. We have a substantially big group of people working on hazelnuts, hybrid hazelnuts, and bringing hazelnuts. We just talked about how we're testing honeyberries. Christelle is here with me, but both of us and with Leslie Hall and our other team member, we've worked on trying to introduce things like or come up with information about production of things like day neutral strawberries, which is not something that traditionally has been commercially produced here in the state. So yes, we do that kind of research. When it comes to availability of plants, no, that is sort of like a private business to have a nursery. So we don't work on that, though we do have a lot of experts that do research and help the nursing industry, but we don't work directly on trying to import them and make them available for the public.
Okay, thank you for the call, Mike. Let's go to Esty in Madison. Hi, Esty.
Hi, congratulations, Jill, on being the new host of the show.
Aw, thank you.
Nice to hear you. I have two peach trees and one huge sweet cherry tree, and both of them have been given fruits every year. I still have some frozen peaches from last year. This year, all three of them bloomed. The cherry had so many flowers that I thought maybe the birds will leave me some cherries. None of them has any sign of any fruit, all three of them. And someone suggested recently that maybe that's because of the heat wave that we had, that it had killed the flowers, which I'm not sure. I can't remember noticing that. So I wonder what your thought is about that, or otherwise what else may have killed all these potential fruit.
Yeah, so I think what happened is spring frost. So we had a number of spring frosts, and I think that Christelle alluded to that already, that, you know, there's in some instances and in some spots, not a lot of apples because some of those blossoms were affected by the frost. And in the case of cherries and in peaches, they bloom even earlier. So we did have a lot of nights and early mornings in which the temperature dropped below 32, the freezing point. And so the blossom, the flowers are the most sensitive tissue to frost. And so as soon as the temperature drops a little bit below the freezing point, those tissues get completely damaged. And then there's no fruit production because the tissues damage. So that is most likely what happened. And that is very typical for cherries and peaches just because they bloom so early.
Well, sorry about that, Esty. Good thing you have some more in the freezer. So yes. You can enjoy those a little bit. Dana, one of the two, emailed to say that he's heard our guests talk about honeyberries, which he believes are the same as, I believe it's pronounced Hascaps. Yep. Mm-hmm. And he has several growing, doing well, but have not produced fruits or flowers. He did get two varieties, which was recommended for pollination. They're in a spot that only gets 3 hours of sun. Otherwise, it's partial shade. Could the shade be a problem?
Absolutely. So that's, I'm going to give you a classic example of how this happens. When you have, a lot of people have like an apple tree and they have all of their fruit is on the outside of the tree. And the reason for that is that the plants need light for those flowers to form on those buds. So in the inside of the canopy, if it's shaded and they don't get light, then there will be no flowers forming on the inside of the canopy. And so in this particular case, if you have your plants on a very shaded spot, they don't get enough light, sunlight, to be able to induce those buds to have flowers for the following season. So that's the problem that you're having. So we usually recommend for food crops to establish them in a spot that you get at least 6 hours of sunlight.
Okay. Well, can you move those pretty well?
It depends. If they're relatively new plants, you could. I would recommend them to probably try to move them in the spring while they're still dormant. So they haven't started growing. And so, yeah, that could be an alternative just to try to move them and to try to take as much as possible of the root system.
That's always the tricky part.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the email. Let's go to Becky and Ryo. Go ahead, Becky.
Hi. Thanks, Jill, for taking my call. And I'm so glad you guys are continuing Garden Talk on Fridays. I love it. So, Amaya, I bought a 2-year budded Wolf River apple tree this spring. It was about 6 feet tall and had new growth on the top of it, but that died out. I was watering it very regularly. It has a very nice sprout coming off of the bottom of the tree, about an inch and a half above the bud graft. That is the Wolf River tree, since it's above the graft, correct?
Yes, yes. If you can clearly see that is coming from above the graft union, that's your cultivar.
Good. So when is the best time to cut off that old 6 feet tall sprout that's dead? How do I get rid of that?
I would get rid of it as soon as possible. You know what? Because I don't know what prompted that to die, but I'm going to just ask you a few questions. Did it just like get like brown and starting like, you know, like falling down like really fast from like, you know, in just a couple of days or weeks?
It took a few weeks and the leaves turned brown and crispy. And it wasn't from lack of water because I was watering diligently.
I wonder if that might be fire blight, which is a bacterial disease, which if Leslie would be here, she could tell you everything about it because that's all she talks about because it's such a big problem in apple production. So my recommendation to you is take it out as soon as possible and actually take it out of your yard and just like move it out. So you want to move as much of that inoculus as possible if it were to be fire blight. And so, yes, you can just go ahead and prune it now.
Okay. Thanks for the call, Becky. Kate in Appleton, you are next. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Hi, I have honeyberries, and I've had them at a couple of different homes now. Number one, they make a great natural wall. They grow quite tall and quite full. All right. I made the mistake of having two of the same type at my last place, and they'd never even flowered. Here, they'll flower, but they do not produce fruit. I have them in a sunny area, but I was wondering, and you can get them easily at Fleet Farm. Fleet Farm has quite a variety of honeyberries.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
I'm wondering why mine are not fruiting.
Yeah, so actually, one of the things is that they bloom, but you need to make sure that that bloom is happening in synchronous at the same time between the two cultivars, because you basically need like the pollen of one to, you know, go to the flower of the other cultivar and vice versa. So what we recommend, and the way that at least I have them at my house, is that I have three different varieties so that they all sort of overlap, even if it's a little bit. Because as you said, if you might only have two, they might only overlap at a, like either at the very beginning of one or the very end of the other one. So you just don't have enough pollen to cross-pollinate them. So one of the things that you could do is get a third plant to increase the amount of pollen. And that should definitely increase the amount of fruit that you would have. And there's a lot, like if you just go and search online, there's quite a bit of information with those pollination charts, so you can find something that is compatible and it would work with the two ones that you already have. So that's one thing that I would suggest, to just try to get three.
Okay, good luck with that, Kate. Thank you for the call. We had a listener email to say that they have a bumper crop of red currants, but they're worried about harvesting, because over the 4th of July weekend, they were out of town and they weren't able to cover the currants to protect them from the annual spraying for spiders. And now, 3 weeks later, are the currants okay to eat or to cook with? I don't know, Christelle, maybe that's, since it's spray for spiders, you'll know a little bit more about that.
So I'm not getting that. They're worried about spiders?
I don't know if they were spraying their, some people spray like everywhere for spiders once a year.
Well, that's an interesting question, because first of all, I wouldn't spray for spiders.
Me either.
Because they're beneficial, right? Spiders will eat other insects that are potentially problematic in your crop. The problem will be if, depending on what they spray, because each pesticide has a different pre-harvest interval, or PHI, which is on every single pesticide, there's a label. And that pre-harvest interval is mandated by federal law. So you really should pay attention on your pesticide bottle, whether it's an insecticide, or an herbicide, or a fungicide, all of them have that information on there. And so technically, you should not be eating it if you are within that pre-harvest interval. Now, if it's been 3 weeks, is that what we heard?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So I don't know that there's a lot of pesticide that 3 weeks would be, you know, and there's some that go beyond 3 weeks, but there's not so many that go beyond 3 weeks. So I would still highly recommend that they go to the pesticide label, look at the PHI or pre-harvest interval, and see how many days from the last spray are you allowed to pick and eat the fruit. At that point, you can eat the fruit. Before that, you cannot pick it or eat it. Okay, so that would be the main thing, is go to the label, because that is really important information for your own safety.
Okay, great. Excellent to know. Alan Brooklyn, Wisconsin, emailed to say that he has three dwarf cherry trees that had tons of flowers but no fruit this year. And he's wondering, he's wondering if covering these trees with a sheet at night, if that would mitigate against light freezing for the cherries.
Not really. It doesn't do anything. I mean, there's been a lot of research trying to do that, and just covering them and not providing a source of heat. You get to the same temperature of the tissue, mm-hmm, with or without the cover.
Sure.
So, unfortunately, that is something that there's nothing that we can do. when it comes to that, unless you want to, you know, put a little heater around your tree.
Well, you can try. What are you going to do? Jeff emailed to say that he would like to grow raspberries. He lives south of Eau Claire on old farmland that is more clay-based than sandy loam. Would planting area be, the planting area would or can receive partial sun or full sun?
Yeah, absolutely. You can, you, yes, we do have quite a bit of growers that commercially produce raspberries, and there's no problem with that. One of the things that I would recommend them is to establish them where the full sun is. Like, the more sun you have, the earlier your plants are going to start growing, the earlier you're going to start harvesting fruit during the growing season. And raspberries grow great in Wisconsin. Christelle will say that the only problem that we have is that we have a very nasty pest, spotted wind drosophila. But if you don't mind a little bit of extra protein with your raspberries, that should be fine.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, Christelle, about what should you look for when it comes to pests with your raspberries?
Right, so that's a great question. So if you asked me that question before I even started my job, I would say there's not so much. You don't have to worry about anything. But since 2012, we have this spotted wing drosophila that Amaya mentioned. And if you have raspberries, the likelihood of you having those little maggots in your fruit is extremely high. So what I would say is that it's a small drosophila. So it's a small little fly like the ones you would have in your kitchen when you have like fruit. And in the summer, we all have drosophila in our kitchens if you eat any kind of fruits or vegetables. And these can cut the skin of the fruit and lay their eggs in ripening and ripe fruit, not overripe fruit like the regular drosophila we see. So if you do plant raspberries, you really want to check your fruit. You don't want to just leave your fruit until it's ready to pick and eat. I mean, you can eat it, but you don't want to be doing that without paying attention. So what you can do is get some fruit and crush them and look inside if there's a little white maggot that's moving around in there, because the likelihood is that you're going to have some of that. So the recommendations, really, if you want to have fruit that you can eat and that you're not worried about having so much problem, because you still might eat some eggs along the process, is to harvest your fruit every other day. If you do that, you're going to reduce the incidence of spotted wing drosophila, and you're going to have potentially more like eggs than you would have larvae that you would be eating. And then refrigerate your fruit. If you do anything along the lines of like jam, or, you know, like if you don't freeze them, you're gonna see those larvae float in your jam. So you're not gonna be really happy. So refrigerating, freezing is also great, because once you kill them, they pause absolutely no problem from a health standpoint. They're totally fine. They have no bacteria or anything like that that they carry with them that would be harmful to humans. So harvesting every other day, or every day even, getting rid of fruit that's infested, because if you don't compost them, if you do, you're going to end up with even more of a population, and then refrigerate them would be the main recommendations.
Okay, great. We've got Marilyn in South Range who has more questions about raspberries. Go right ahead, Marilyn.
Hi. Well, I live in the middle of the field, and I've had raspberries for a long time, but the raspberries this year seem to be a lot smaller. Is it possible to that they are the wild raspberries? Because they're not as big as my raspberries have been in the past. And I have wild strawberries 25 feet away. Anyhow, so my question would be, is there a way to tell the difference between raspberries that are wild and raspberries that I've purchased?
Yeah, you should be able to, when you're picking the fruit and you're picking from, a cane or shoot that has small fruit, one of the things that you can compare is the morphology in general, how that shoot looks. How do the leaves look? Do they have different coloration? Do they have maybe more of like, are they more hairy or not? Do you get you know, maybe how difficult it is to detach the raspberries from one shoot versus the other. Like when you find, oh, these are the classic ones that I've been harvesting. They look like the ones that I have harvested other years, that's the size, versus this is something that looks a little bit different in terms of the fruit characteristic, then just try to look at differences in the shoots itself and the leaves. And that could, you know, if they're different, then it means that it's not just that the fruit is different, it's that you might have had some of those wild plants that they just, like, you know, infested your patch. Then the other thing to think about is that we've talked about how it has been dry this year, and I don't know specifically the conditions, the growing conditions where you are, but, you know, not every year we get beautiful big fruit, and so this might be one year and that maybe you have a lot of fruit, or maybe that patch has been actually really dry, so you ended up having less fruit or a smaller fruit than what you have hoped or you have had on other years. So that's another possibility.
Okay. Thank you, Marilyn. Jim and Wassa, you are next.
Hello.
Yes. Go right ahead, please.
We have a blueberry patch and we live out in the country. We've had Drosophila in our blueberry patch for probably about at least 10 years, maybe more. Mm-hmm. And this year is there aren't as many. And I don't know why, but anyway, just wanted to let you know that maybe it'll let up eventually. But what we have now is Japanese beetles that are trying to eat the little green berries, and they ruin an awful lot of them.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jim. Christelle, I'm sure you've heard that story before.
Yes, I have. And I think it's wishful thinking, but I hope you're right that they're going to knit it up a little bit. So I mentioned that a little bit earlier in the show. It's all dependent also on the weather conditions that we have. And this year it's been dry, and spotted wing Drosophila really likes moisture. They like humidity at like 80%, and that's where they thrive. So the fact that right now, and we're still for spotted wing Drosophila, July 24th is early, kind of, you know, in the season for them, because they can go until the first frost. So, and maybe even more than just the first frost. So, What you might be seeing right now is a delayed start, or potential if it stays dry, like a low population. And we've seen that over the years. If it's dry and stays dry, not only do you get a slow start, but your population is not going to flourish. You're still going to see some, but you're not going to see as many as if it was a wet spring. And then, of course, Japanese beetle, you're going to have to deal with that regardless. I mean, some years we've had years where if it's really dry in the spring, they just don't emerge. So I always forget now which year it was, 22 or 23. And so you might see fewer, but it's rare. We don't get so often those years of like low Japanese beetle population. So yes, the Japanese beetle are out. They are doing great, and they love raspberries. So you're going to see them on your raspberries. I don't know. Maybe that's a question for you. Do you see them on your fruit or primarily on the leaves? Because Japanese beetle are interesting. In some crops, they feed on the fruit, like apples. They feed on the leaves. They feed on the fruit. In grapes, they never feed on the fruit. They only feed on the leaves. So in raspberries, I think they might do both. I've seen them mostly on the leaves, but actually, I saw them last week on the flowers, which is interesting. They were, because it's dry, I think they were drinking nectar. But I don't know. Do you see them on your fruit at all, in your raspberries?
It's strange. It can do a little bit of both. And yeah, I see them all over on mine. They're not eating the strawberries, but they're eating the leaves. So yeah, go figure. Well, ladies, we have to wrap this up, I'm afraid. Thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll see you again next year. So we want to thank Amaya Atucha and Christelle Goudeau, both from UW-Madison, for being with us. Stick around. We're going to have Bruce Spangenberg from UW Extension with us to basically take all the rest of your questions. So stay with us. We'll be right back.